So in this module, I want to talk to you about how do you prevent accidents. These are the basic steps that parents need to take to ensure that the iPad is set up to prevent children from either making in-app purchases, which I often refer to as accidents, how to prevent children from deleting apps, and also how to prevent the likelihood that your child will access inappropriate content on the iPad. Now, it's really important that I stress that this does not completely guarantee your child's safety using the iPad. No filtering process and no restrictions are 100% security. There are always possible risks. So this doesn't completely get you off the hook. You still need to take a really active role, but it gives you some peace of mind knowing that the device has been set up in a way that will ensure your child's highest chances of being safe online. So in this module, I'm going to talk to you about what you need to know about educational apps, because just because they're in that category doesn't necessarily mean they're educationally valid. I'm going to tell you about the five types of apps that are currently available in the iTunes App Store. And then I'm going to talk to you about what restrictions you need to set up, some of the basic parental controls on your device. Then I'm going to talk about privacy settings and then the option of using family sharing if you own an iOS device. So let's dive in to what do you need to know as a parent. We're going to dive in now to what do you need to know about apps for children. So really important that just because an app's in the education category doesn't necessarily mean that it's educational. The app developers need to go through a process to submit their app to the iTunes App Store, but they basically have to ensure that the app doesn't contain any inappropriate content or links to inappropriate content to access online. And these are the basic criteria that an app needs to meet to be considered educational. There is no rigorous screening process or validation or merit process to actually to scrutinize and examine the educational merits of an app. So as we've seen, the app developers are scrambling to get into the apps for kids and the education categories because they've seen parents and educators looking for educational apps. So really important, be very mindful that just because they're in a particular category in an app store doesn't necessarily mean the app is educationally sound. App developers tend to be males and often aged in their 20s, and they learned very differently to how we now know from the neuroscience and the developmental research how young children most effectively learn. Most app developers went through a schooling system. They tend to be in their early 20s and males predominantly, and they went through a schooling system where rote learning and memorization of facts was how they learnt. So it's not surprising to see them creating apps of a similar design: rote learning, skill and drill, know your basic facts and concepts. And this is not necessarily what and how young children need to learn effectively. And the other thing you need to know about the Educational App Store is the educational claims in many apps are not actually grounded in research. They're not always validated. There are some very big claims in a lot of app descriptions that the app will boost your child's number recognition or will improve their recall of the times tables, or will enhance academic performance, boost language skills. Just be mindful that these claims haven't always been empirically or scientifically tested. The claims that app developers can make are not necessarily tightly regulated, so just be very mindful about any educational claims in apps, app descriptions. So at the moment, these are the five types of apps that are available in the App Store, in the iOS App Store. So more often than not, parents think we have just paid and free apps, but there are actually five different types of apps, and I'm going to explain them to you now. The first and most obvious type are paid apps, and these vary from 99 cents up to around $280 is the most expensive app for a child at the moment. Now, before you panic, the $280 app is for children on the autism spectrum, and anyone who has used this app has said that it's worth every single cent. In 2013, most children's apps were around the $2.13 mark, and they have gradually increased from that point in time. very important distinction. A lot of book apps tend to be a lot more expensive than other regular children's apps. Book publishers and book app developers realized very early on that they'd start with more of a premium priced model than the 99 cent model. So paid apps first and foremost. Then the next type of app will actually say free in the App Store, but these light apps often have a little corner banner on the icon that will say light. And these are a bit like a test taster, a bit like test driving a car before you buy it. With these apps, you don't get the full suite of functionality in the app. So for example, if it's a book app, you might get the first six pages in the book. And if you like this particular book, then you have to pay for the full version. Other popular examples following this light model, and a great app that I recommend is called Poplet. It's a brainstorming or a concept mapping app. And using the light version, there is a limited capacity to store finished mind maps when you're complete. So light apps give you a limited scope of usability in the view that you can see if you like the app. And if you do, you obviously pay to have full functionality. So I actually highly recommend them, that model, for parents, particularly if you're looking for an app for your child and you're not quite sure it's the right fit. The next type of app will say is a subscription app. Now, it will tell you when you purchase the app that it is a recurring payment. So much like a magazine subscription, a subscription-based app will charge you a recurring fee in return for regular updated content. So at the moment, most subscription apps for children, things like National Geographic for kids, much like a magazine, they provide ongoing and updated content. A lot of book apps and libraries of book apps are providing a subscription model. So you pay a recurring monthly or quarterly fee and new content is added to the store. The next two types will both say free in the App Store. So they won't say free ad supported or freemium. It will just specifically say free, as will the light app. And these, the free ad supported apps, are apps that are free but have pop-up advertising banners within the app, usually at the top and the bottom of the app. Now, this can be really problematic because these banner ads change, and the regulations regarding what banner apps, what content can be advertised, is not very tight at this point in time. And there have been some unsavory instances, and I'll tell you my own personal experience with this, where children have been exposed to inappropriate advertising. So I used a calculator app, a free calculator app that had pop-up ads in it, and I'd used it previously and it was fine, but on this particular day I was using it with some year three boys. It was at a boys' school. These children were using the iPad perfectly, it seemed, and I was working with another group of students over the other side of the room. And when I heard fits of laughter coming from this group of boys, my instant reaction was to think they've learnt to type rude words on the calculator. And it wasn't until I went over that I realized these boys weren't typing rude words on the calculator. They were actually looking at inappropriate content. The pop-up ads on that particular calculator app were not what year three boys need to see. So a lot of children's toy and food manufacturers are creating free ads. Sometimes they have the ad-supported apps are obviously towards their products, but some other apps that are free have rolling banner ads to all sorts of different products and websites. So just be really mindful of these. Now, the next type of app is what we need to be really careful with. Now, I don't want to create the stigma that these are bad and should be avoided. We just need to know how to manage them. And I'm going to show you in this module what sort of restrictions you need to have in place to ensure that your child can't be making some dangerous purchasing decisions when using freemium apps. So a freemium app, in essence, is a free app that offers in-app purchases. And these in-app purchases can range from 99 cents right up to hundreds of dollars. The worst instance I've heard, a story in New York, when the iPad was first rolled out, and a mum, it was a wet long weekend, and a mum had bought the iPad for her daughter, and she had downloaded an app that her friends were playing called Smurfberry Village. And her daughter spent most of this wet long weekend playing the Smurfberry Village app and was building a really elaborate environment for her Smurfberries to be playing in. And Mum was delighted. Mum skipped into work on the Tuesday morning after the weekend and was gloating to her colleagues about how her child had played on the iPad and she'd managed to read a book and relax all weekend. And it wasn't until later Tuesday morning, when you get your delayed iTunes bill emailed to you, that Mum had some bill shock. Her daughter had been building a very elaborate Smurfberry village. In fact, it was so elaborate, she'd spent about $1,500 creating this particular village. Now, this was hugely concerning for this mum because she had been very wise and hadn't given her daughter her iTunes password. She thought that meant that there was no way her daughter could be making any additional purchases, but that was not the case. In this instance, what had happened, and something that we'll look at in the restrictions section of this particular module, is that her daughter had been had found an additional in-app purchase. She'd then gone to ask her mum to purchase it, and this required her mum to enter her iTunes password. Now, after this, the mum did not have in-app purchasing disabled on the device. So after this initial purchase, there is the what we call the magic 15-minute rule. And I don't know if you recall, but anytime you've purchased something in iTunes, if this is, and this is the default setting, if the 15 minutes is selected, it means you can make multiple purchases within that 15 minutes without having to re-enter your password. So in this instance, the particular girl had got her mum's approval, mum had entered her iTunes password, she downloaded the in-app purchase, but her daughter had then gone and made additional in-app purchases. Now, this was before there were changes made to prompt for warnings for in-app purchases and to require passwords. But this particular girl racked up a $1,500 bill. So you need to be really mindful, and I'll show you in just a moment how you can set up some parental controls to ensure this doesn't happen. So how do I know if an app has in-app purchases? Underneath in the iTunes App Store, underneath the purchased amount, we'll tell you here, you can see it says quite clearly offers in-app purchases. And then below, you can actually see then this freemium app is quite expensive if you were to buy the extra packages that go along with it. So you can, for example, use this Sock Puppets app, and it's actually a great app. I highly recommend it. But if you want extra background packs or extra customization, so different characters, etc., you do need to make in-app purchases. So I want to again reiterate, freemium apps are not necessarily bad apps and we don't necessarily need to avoid them, but we just need to make sure that we've got the necessary restrictions set up that will prevent our child from making any of these in-app purchases. So in this section, I'm going to explain what restrictions that you need to set up. Now, it's important to remember that these restrictions allow you to make and set device-wide restrictions, and these will always be enforced. At this point in time, Apple doesn't allow you to provide multiple user accounts. So this means that if you set these restrictions on this device, it doesn't matter if mum, your 12-year-old son, or your 2-year-old toddler is using it, the same restrictions will apply. So just bear that in mind. If the iPad is primarily your device or their device, it might have some bearing on how, the types of restrictions you set up. So when we use restrictions, you can prevent your child from using certain types of apps. You can prevent them from installing and even deleting apps. You can, and these are the types of appsidents I refer to, disabling in-app purchases. You can actually allow or disallow them to install apps with particular rating systems. You can prevent them accessing certain types of websites, and you can even lock down some of the other settings, such as their capacity to access Safari, so the internet, and also disabling the camera. And we'll go through some of these in just a moment. Again, and I know I keep stressing this, this does not give you complete guarantee that your child's time on the iPad is safe. You need to look at other preventative measures as well, and you need to be actively involved. But these give you some reassurance that you've provided some preventative mechanisms that will inhibit or at least limit your child's capacity to access inappropriate content online. So what I'm going to do now is show you some of the restrictions that I think parents need to set up. We're going to go through first and foremost how to disable the in-app purchases, and then I'm going to show you some of the other features in the restrictions that you may want to turn off or have activated. So to access restrictions, I simply go into my settings and I go into general and I scroll down and you can see the option for restrictions. Now, if you've never set this up before, where mine at the top says disable restrictions, yours will obviously say enable restrictions. You need to tap that and you'll be prompted to enter a 4-digit passcode. Two important things here. One, remember, write down what that passcode is. And two, don't tell it to your children. This would enable them to obviously make some of the changes. So the first and most important accident we want to prevent is in-app purchases. We do not want our children to have the capacity to buy a trunk of stars for $99 as they can do in the app Tapsu. So we want to make sure that in-app purchases is turned off. This means that when they're in an app that does have in-app purchases, when they go to buy an in-app purchase, a notification will appear on the screen saying that in-app purchases are disabled. So even if they happen to know your password, they still won't be able to make that purchase. So that gives you some peace of mind. You'll also notice here deleting apps. This is a very common accident as well, where children accidentally hold down the home button, the apps wobble, and the child clicks on the little cross and subsequently deletes the app. Obviously, you don't need to repurchase the app. It's stored in your account, but any data that's associated with that, so if it's a storytelling app or a movie making app that hasn't been backed up, the data within that is lost. Installing apps, again, up to you, but whether you want your child to have the capacity to install apps. And I'm going to scroll. Now, I mentioned before about this magic 15-minute rule, and it's important to know that you can actually stop this from occurring. And with any iTunes or App Store purchase, you can actually ask for your password to be required after every single purchase. Now, again, this depends on whether it's predominantly your device or your child's device. But you can do this by going into settings and to the app and iTunes store and then going into password settings. Now, if you've got the Touch ID turned on for purchases where you just use your thumb, you actually won't see this menu. But if you don't have that turned on, from this password settings button here, you should then be able to say that you want to always require a password for any additional purchases made in any of the iTunes or App Stores. You can also specify whether you want this for under the free downloads option as well. You can alternatively do this on a desktop or a laptop computer. Always with any of these restrictions and settings, privacy settings, always make sure that you have the latest operating system running. On your Mac computer, you can go to the menu bar at the top of your computer screen and you can choose iTunes and then preferences. With Windows users, you can hold down the Control and the B key on your keyboard, and then you can open up the iTunes menu bar, and then from here you can change your preferences. So you can notice here on the screen, you can always require a password for purchases or after 15 minutes or never require one, and the same thing with free downloads. So this gives you some more control over what your child's accessing and how they're accessing it as well. Scroll back up to the top now. There are some additional restrictions you may want to apply here. So for example, you may not want your child having access to the internet, in which case you can simply turn off Safari. For your child that's constantly taking selfies or silly photographs, you can disable the camera. Similarly, if your child's asking Siri ridiculous questions, you can turn off the Siri option. FaceTime, I'm going to tell you a funny story, and this is a real story about why you might want to be careful about FaceTime being on. A friend of mine had set her 2-year-old daughter up on the Play School app, and she needed to quickly go and have a shower. So she left her child playing the app. She'd used it many times before. She got out of the shower and realized the dreaded no towel scenario had taken place. So she quickly wiped the water from her eyes and was running towards the linen press to retrieve a towel. And she noticed her daughter was no longer playing the Play School app. And she walked over and approached the iPad to realize her daughter had jumped out of FaceTime and had instead had jumped out of play school and had instead launched FaceTime. And this particular child had managed to use, it was Dad's work iPad, so the 2-year-old had tapped the last person Dad had FaceTimed, and that happened to be his colleague in the US. So here was Mum standing stark naked trying to figure out what was going on, and her daughter was FaceTiming Dad's colleague. So you may want to disable FaceTime, especially if children are taking this device to school. You can also see down here, you can restrict whether or not children have access to podcasts or music content or even the iTunes store. Further down under allowed content, there's also the capacity for you to set particular ratings. So you can set ratings for different countries, whether music and podcasts and news can provide explicit content. You'll also notice under TV programs, you can select the ratings that children are able to access. Similarly with books, whether explicit content can be involved. And with apps, you can also set the age range that can be accessible and downloaded. Now, important side note here, just be mindful doing this. Sometimes you can cut off your child's capacity to access worthwhile apps. App developers sometimes underestimate a child's capacity, or you might have a particularly able child, and restricting older apps may inhibit their access to some of those more appropriate apps. You can also see in websites, you can also limit your child's access to particular websites, and you can even be quite precise in only allowing additional websites, and there's also the capacity for you to enter websites as well. So you can be quite specific depending on the age of your child and their maturity levels, what types of access they can have. Now, we also need to be really mindful of location services. This can be a positive thing, especially if you want to find a missing iPad or iPhone. So location services can be wonderful, but we need to be really mindful that kids aren't always broadcasting their location on an app or to friends. So sometimes it's worthwhile, and again, depending on the age of your child and how they'll be using the device, is that you may not want location services turned on at all. Some of the really important things to consider here is especially with the camera. When a child's taking photos, if they're then sharing them on particular apps, or if they're older and sharing them on social media, or if you are using this as your own personal device and sharing photos of children, if the location services are on, this is storing some metadata about where and when, in fact, the exact location in which the photo was taken. And whilst popular social media sites like Facebook and Instagram and Twitter strip out that metadata, they don't make it accessible if you're uploading photos, other apps and websites don't necessarily do this. They keep that metadata in there. So really important that you make sure that the location services are turned off, particularly for the camera if your child's using it. There are some worthwhile things keeping, some reasons why you might want to keep your location services turned on, particularly if you want to be able to retrieve the iPad. I found this really helpful. It had fallen out of my handbag one day and I was frantically searching the house and I knew I hadn't left it at a meeting. Used the location services and could see it was somewhere in the vicinity, and of course it was parked in my car out the front. So privacy settings can be really helpful as well. So just be mindful and always do a sort of a regular check of your restrictions and privacy settings. Sometimes with updates to operating systems, some of these changed slightly. So it's really important that you just do a quick check regularly to make sure you've got the most up-to-date settings. And the third thing I want to talk to you about in terms of preventing accidents, and a really great idea, a really positive way that Apple have tried to come up with solutions, particularly for families, is with family sharing. So family sharing actually makes it possible for up to 6 people in your family to share each other's iTunes, iBooks, App Store purchases without having to share accounts. So what will happen is you pay for family purchases with the same credit card, And you can actually, as the organizer of the family sharing option, you can approve kids' spending straight from your device. So if your child's taking this device to school, or if you're at work and they're wanting to purchase an app or some music, you can actually, as the organizer, approve their purchase remotely. You can also share photos and family calendars to keep everybody in your family organized. And you can use Apple Music, so you can share music as well with your family membership. So to get started, an adult in your household becomes the organizer. So usually mum or dad, and they can then invite up to 5 additional family members. And as the organizer, you agree to pay for any iTunes, iBooks, or App Store purchases that are initiated as part of this family group. Once the family members join, then the features of family sharing are set up to everyone's devices automatically. So all new purchases initiated by members will be billed to this family organizer's account. But as the organizer, you still call the shots. So you can turn on the ask to buy function for children in the family. And in fact, the ask to buy is automatically turned on by default if the child's under 13. So that's a really great preventative measure. So when a child initiates a purchase, an alert is then sent to the organizer, who can then review the download. They can approve it or they can decline it right there and then on their device. So you might be sitting at work, your child's at school, they're wanting to download a particular app for school, and you can approve it remotely or decline it as well. Now, this applies to both purchases and also to free downloads. So sometimes there's, you know, apps like Facebook and Instagram are free, so there is no purchasing or costs involved. So it gives you that full scope of control over what the child's doing. In order to set up family sharing, you can go to your iOS device you can do it on your desktop or laptop computer. But if you go to your iCloud account, it then gives you information about family. And from here, I would obviously be the organizer since I'm initiating this family account. I can then add family members, either entering their name or an email address. And I can, as I mentioned before, create an Apple ID for a child, and they don't necessarily have to be 13 years of age. In order to make purchases, their own purchases, they obviously do, but there is the scope to also create an Apple ID for younger children with obviously limited capacity as to what they can access. So there we have family sharing. So hopefully this has given you some information about how you can take some preventative measures to ensure your child's safe online. Remember, none of these completely guarantee your child's online safety. You still need to assume an active role, but this gives you some assurance and peace of mind that you have put some preventative measures in place to limit the likelihood that they'll encounter inappropriate content or have some of these common apps incidents.